Welcome to the Gridiron Show, and thankfully week two is now in the rearview mirror. Week three is upon us. We can forget about all that craziness and get on with enjoying real football teams doing real things. We've got a great show coming up for you, including speaking to Mike Tenenbaum from the Miami Dolphins, and we're going to be looking at all of the week three games. Can't wait. Ollie's in the studio with me. Let's talk some football. That is aggressively loud this week.
Yeah, I like it.
I've got a feeling that no one will have heard a single word of my intro, but that's not a problem whatsoever. It probably wasn't worth hearing anyway. Ollie, welcome. How are you, sir?
Grand. Yourself?
Yeah, very well indeed. Very well indeed. You're listening to The Gridiron Show in association with Sports Travel Tours, of course. SportsTravelTours.com to check out all the information about them. They do fantastic tours for sports fans. It's travel for sports fans, by sports fans, and it's not just the NFL. All the American sports covered, the F1's covered. It's an absolutely fantastic service, so go out and check them online. If you're thinking of arranging any kind of trip, you will get a more unique, enjoyable trip if you do it with those guys.
Where would you go if it wasn't NFL?
Well, I'd go on a college football tour, obviously.
Oh, okay. If it wasn't football. Oh, you're such a dick.
Yeah, sorry. All right. I mean, they do loads of good stuff. I've never been to see the F1 live before. And whilst I hate it on TV, I think live it'd be interesting. And they do F1 in Dallas. I think that'd be brilliant. They do all sorts of motorsport stuff. In Austin, in Texas, Kescaladiff.
Texas is massive.
Yeah, it's not that big.
It's a long way from Dallas to Austin.
It's actually not, that's the one thing, it's not that far from Dallas to Austin. It's only about a 2-hour drive. Texas is huge, but Dallas and Austin are literally like right next door to each other.
It's 2 hours.
It'd be like mistaking Edinburgh for London versus mistaking London for Essex.
Fine.
That's the distance.
It's not 2 hours
about.
From Essex to London.
No, but I'm making a comparison.
Oh, okay.
Thanks. Also, gridiron-magazine.com. Get online. Make sure you make your picks in the weekly game. Check out the articles we've got up there. There is a preview of the new edition of Gridiron Magazine, which includes the chat you'll have already heard on this podcast in a reduced version with Jay Fiedler, the former quarterback of the Dolphins, and Marcus Coleman, the former cornerback of the Jets, talking about the Monday Night Miracle. And it's got all our Jets preview stuff ahead of the Wembley game in just over a week's time, Ollie!
That's mad. How fast is that quicked up?
Amazing. It quicked up.
Come up.
Crept up.
Yeah.
Good.
I was speaking so fast.
That you got so excited.
Yeah, my brain could not cope with what was going on.
That's not the first time that's happened in this studio.
No, that's you're right there.
But it's got our Jets section of the review, and there's a fantastic Dolphins preview as well in the full magazine, which we'll be dropping onto your doorsteps next week in time for that first London game. And part of that is a big look at the Miami Dolphins and the regeneration they've had this offseason, including our chat with Mike Tenenbaum, the Executive Vice President of Football Operations for the Miami Dolphins. He's had a huge effect on the team this offseason since he joined in a consultancy role since February. We talked to him for the magazine, but we recorded the interview, and we're going to bring you a cut-down version of that interview today, and then you're going to be able to get the rest of it in the magazine and vice versa.
Nice tease ahead.
See? Yeah. Look, good. Yeah. So that'll be coming up very, very shortly. Ollie, before we get on to talking about football, and we've got a great way to be talking about the football this week, because week two was so nuts, we're going to go through all the games, and we're going to take it in turns to back the underdog.
We're going through all the games of week three.
Yes, yeah, I'm not going back through the week two games again.
Because I've only prepped for week three. I don't want to go back to week two.
No, nobody wants to go back to week two.
It's not back in time.
We both managed 4 picks each last week, so
I think
I'm hoping
I got
for
6.
No, you got 4.
Was it just 4?
Yeah,
no.
Unless there's another Ollie who does the pick 'em game.
It's just Ollie.
Yeah, just Ollie, yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, exactly. Don't worry, I got 4 as well.
Okay.
The winner with 11, you're a freak. I didn't mean that. I'm so sorry. That was so overly harsh.
Definitely are.
But we're going to go through all of the week three games, and we're going to back an underdog each with each one. We're going to pick them draft style, take it in turns. Oh. So we'll do that shortly. Ollie's feeling the pressure already, mainly because I only told him about this about 5 minutes before we went on air. Preparation is key, kids. And
did you just say kids and then point at the computer?
110%. I feel like I'm more in the mode if I do stuff like that. And yeah, we're going to have a look back at the Thursday night game, which we're recording this on Thursday evening, so we don't know the outcome of that game yet. Right here, right now, We will Scooby-Doo it into me reviewing Thursday Night Football. Reviewing? And whilst I'm reviewing it, I'm going to drink some water and stop sounding like a mess. But before we do that, let's quickly pick the game and then see how correct we were when people know what the score is in the morning. So the Giants are looking to avoid an 0-3 start with a fifth straight win over Washington on Thursday night, tonight, in MetLife Stadium. No team running for as many yards as Washington, but the Giants have been very stout against the run, plagued by woes on offense so far. Odell Beckham's had one good half of football. Can that change tonight against an aging Washington secondary? Sorry, friend of the show, D'Angelo Hall. What do you think?
It's got to be Giants.
I, too, have picked the Giants.
But this isn't part of our drafting.
This isn't part of our
this
drafting.
Like, bonus. Okay, so I've picked the Giants because I think they will stop Freddie and Matt Jones, and I think the offense will start to click.
Let's find out. So all in all, a pretty decent Monday night game, certainly full of incident as the New York Giants actually held on to a fourth quarter lead, dominating Washington in a 32-21 victory that was finished off with Odell Beckham's 30-yard touchdown catch. New York did fall apart in the fourth quarter losses to Dallas and Atlanta. This time, the Giants now 1-2, stayed in front late in the game against the injury-plagued Washington side, who lost D'Angelo Hall to a right leg injury that looked pretty seriously. Friend of the show, we hope you feel better. The Giants scored in nearly every way possible, beginning with Rashard Jennings blocking Trezway's punt for a safety on Washington's opening series. That was after the punt had been brought back once already. Andre Williams scored a one-yard touchdown run for the only touchdown of the first half. Josh Brown scored three field goals. Beckham toasted Breshad Breeland to settle matters. Prince Amagamora and Uanani Unaga had interceptions of Kirk Cousins, who really did struggle against New York. Just to give a particular amount of love to Prince Amukamara, when they were 15 points up, he not only already had the interception, but he had what was clearly, for me, a forced fumble. I think the ball was going into Garcon, if I'm correct, and he knocked the ball out. It ended up getting ruled not a catch. He seemed to take two or three steps before the ball came out. It seemed absolutely ridiculous to me. And then immediately after that, he gave up a pass interference call, which allowed Washington to drive and nearly score, bringing them back into the game touchdown. There were some positives for Washington. I mean, they could have been very much more in this game had Matt Jones not fumbled the ball as he was carrying it across the line midway through the fourth quarter. That would have made a huge difference on the game. I mean, there is good news. Pierre Garcon was very good, although they had to settle for a field goal on too many occasions in the first half. Matt Jones looked very good early on, but really dropped off as the game went on. And I think the two biggest takeaways, the three biggest takeaways I have from this game. The first of all is Eli Manning. Eli Manning impressed early, completed his first eight passes. He had two touchdown passes today, the one to Odell Beckham, and he also had a second one to Reuben Randall late in the game. A few wild throws, a few overthrows, but he's now at 100 career wins, the second most in Giants history, only behind Phil Simms with 101. His 263 touchdown passes makes him the quarterback with the 12th most of all time. And I think we give him some stick, but he's yet to have an interception through the first three games of the season. Compare that with the form of 2 years ago. When passing to his two first-choice receivers in Odell Beckham and Reuben Randall tonight, he was 14 of 16, 195 yards, two touchdowns and more than 10 first down. Odell Beckham had 14th career receiving touchdown in his 15th game. And honestly, all in all, this offense looked like an impressive unit. They managed to run the ball. They got the rushing touchdown and genuinely they looked decent. It was an uneventful first half. The second half picked up in a big way. There were 32 points in the second half, four touchdowns, including for Washington in that fourth quarter, 100-yard kickoff return, two onside kicks, that goal line fumble for Matt Jones. So it was all rather exciting. I am concerned, the Giants defense overall look like a much, much better unit than we expected. They were very good against the run and really restricted Washington to, I think, Matt Jones managed about 36 yards on the night on 11-odd carries. And we didn't see much more out of Freddie Morris, six carries again for about 4 yards carry. So nothing huge out of them. Some of that was game flow. Some of that was the fact that Washington were having to throw the ball throughout. But I thought Prince Amukamara looked particularly good in the backfield. And overall, they look like a much, much stronger unit than we expected. But even so, they gave up big points in the fourth quarter yet again. The stat that really stood out for me was in the first three quarters of their first three games, so nine quarters in total, they've given up just 29 points. In the three fourth quarters they've taken part in, they've given up 42 points. So they need to be a team that learns to close out a game. Washington should not have had any chance to be in this one. And a big reason that Washington shouldn't have had any chance to be in this one was Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins and RG3 now have 23 career interceptions each. Kirk Cousins did that in 514 pass attempts. Just remember, Aaron Rodgers has thrown at home 545 without a single interception. RG3 also has 23 interceptions, but his in 1,063, well over 500 more attempts. So he's not as good at holding onto the ball. In the first half, when they were just 8-0 down, Jordan Reed should have had an absolute nailed-on touchdown. He burnt Landon Collins on the outside, and Kirk Cousins just horribly overthrew him. Landon Collins managed to bat the ball down, potentially could have intercepted it if he'd turned his head earlier. And what was initially a blown play for the rookie safety ended up looking like a pretty decent play on him. So Kirk Cousins is a real worry. I'd seriously start to think about Colt McCoy at this point, or see what even RG3 can manage, because the quarterback play from Kirk Cousins really isn't good enough. Washington going forwards will need to rely on that run game, but if they come up against a run defense as good as the Giants were, and if a team get up early on them and they can't run the ball, I don't trust them to go through the air particularly. So all in all, an impressive night for the Giants, a chance for them certainly to bounce back, and certainly Ben McAdoo's offense is really starting to come together. I've been impressed with this team. I think they've been in games tight. I don't think they've given up the ball too often. They've been probably silly to let leads go, and they've made some silly mistakes mentally in those other two losses. But I look at their games coming up in the schedule, and I look at what's going on in the rest of their division. I mean, we'll see how the Eagles do this weekend. We'll see how the Cowboys do this weekend. But considering they, over the next few games, they've got, they're at the Bills, then they welcome the 49ers in, then they're at the Eagles, and they welcome the Cowboys in. You get 2 to 3 wins out of those four games, you're probably going to beat the 49ers, to be fair. So you get another 2 wins out of those other three. You come out of those games 3-1, and they look like a playoff team despite going 0-2. So good work for the Giants. Difficult night for Washington. A fun, entertaining game overall. Let's go back and look at the rest of the weekend's games. Back.
Wow.
Ends up we were both right.
Yeah. Who would have thought?
Ends up we were both wrong.
I think you'll find that I said I would was picking the Washington.
I think if people skip back about 5 minutes, they will hear that is not true.
No, you are wrong, and they have heard it wrong.
Fantastic. So we're going to go through and pick of each of these week's games. Now, there's bits of news to sprinkle in amongst it, and also you've got in touch with us on Twitter at Gridiron, also on our Facebook page, Gridiron Magazine on Facebook. So we've got some responses from there, and we'll go through those as we get into the games. What we're going to do is try and sprinkle the news throughout to make this a more efficient podcast. We may fail, because I may skip over some news, but there we go. Ollie, to kick off our underdog draft for this week.
Yep.
Who would you like to pick the game for first?
I would like to pick the Titans taking on the Colts. Now, surely the Colts are the favourites in this game.
Just to confirm that in this game, the Tennessee Titans are the underdog. Well done, you've picked the underdog. The Colts only a 3.5-point favourite after an 0-2 start. We've had a couple of tweets on this. Titans UK, I'm sticking with the Titans laying a 50 burger on the Colts on Sunday. is the PC channel turned up, Ollie? Let's get hysterical, hysterical. I was going to let the whole thing run then, the full length version. and additionally, Lem, my bold prediction is a Colts win. I'm sure that you feel like that is a bold prediction right now, Lem, because it's been tough on you so far. I do understand that. But honestly, it's going to get better as a Colts fan. So, Ollie, why have you gone ahead and picked the Titans to make the upset in this game?
Well, the Colts were terrible last week. They've been terrible the first 2 weeks. Last week, they committed 11 penalties, wasted a red zone chance when Vinatieri missed a 29-yard field goal. Luck has been under siege by aggressive defenses, and he threw 5 interceptions over the last 2 games. Okay, the Titans' defense isn't great, but it was pretty good against a very poor Tampa Bay team in week one. So, if they're going up another struggling quarterback, struggling offensive line, struggling defense, Vontae Davis, we don't know whether he'll be back from concussion protocols yet. Tight end Delanie Walker, hopefully, will be back, but for the Titans. But Fasano, Chase Kaufman, they did pretty well in his absence last week. I'm going for a Titans win.
Interesting. Now,
I mean, not in gridiron pick 'em, I'm going Colts.
I mean, there's a reason that this line is so small. It's only just over a field goal. And yeah, the Colts have overcome this kind of early season adversity before. They were 0-2 last year, of course, and went on to make the playoffs. But this does seem more problematic. And we talked about it in some real depth the other day. However, despite the fact that we talked about how Andrew Luck needs to take some responsibility at this point, I think all of the noises that have come out of Indianapolis this week suggested that that's what they're going to do. I think Pep Hamilton needs to realise that from a play-calling perspective, that the Colts need to get it back on the ground. Frank Gore had that freakish fumble last week, but I did the maths on it. That's only his 31st fumble of his career, where he's had over 2,500 touches through the air and on the ground.
And listen, he's not going to get another one because it's one per year of his age.
There we go. But even though he's been playing in the league since like 20, that doesn't quite
work. His age.
But
he's 31 years old.
He's averaged 3 a season in total. I understand he's 31 years old, but my point is he's not 31 football years old. He's 11 years old.
But that's why it works. 31 years old, 31 fumbles.
So he's never going to fumble the ball again if he doesn't play past this year.
Exactly.
Fine. Okay.
# bold prediction.
So I think Frank Gore will see a lot more of the ball. I think Andrew Luck needs to understand to not just be throwing it into holes. I don't like the Titans pass rush particularly. I think they've got a half decent secondary. It's not as bad as people necessarily rate it, but I just think this is the week the Colts are going to pick themselves up, dust themselves off against AFC South opponents and claim this one.
And there's a chance Womack won't be playing due to a sprained knee. You see what I did there. What's your pick on our non-favourites draft? Underdog draft.
The underdog draft. I am going to take... This is a little bit slightly possibly cheating.
Yeah, who would have thought you would have done that?
Well, no, because there are a lot of games. Some of the games are much further out, let's be honest. Some of them are 15 points, 14 points, 7 points favourites. I'm going to take Buffalo Bills to bounce back from that big loss against New England at home this week, go into Miami, send Miami to London with a 1-2 record. Simon's tweeted us to say Philbin uses all of his cardigan-coated charisma to inspire the Finns to bring down Big Brash Rexy.
I mean, just for alliteration purposes alone, that was just wonderful,
sexual.
Simon.
The Dolphins in this game are 2.5-point favourites, so technically I am picking the underdog, but I believe that this is much more of a coin flip game. Both defences are still trying to meet high expectations heading into the season. For all the talk of how Rex Ryan wanted to transform the Bills into a bully this season, New England took them apart last week. I just think that that was great coaching. I loved what they did in the first week. I loved the way they mixed it up on the line. They brought very different looks. They brought very different blitzes. And I think Miami's offence haven't quite started to click yet. There's potentially issues in the rush game. They've brought
Jonas Gray,
thank you very much, into the active squad. And I believe that's got a lot to do with the fact that they're not sure Lamar Miller is going to be back for this week. Mm-hmm. And whilst I like the Dolphins, and we'll speak to Mike Tannenbaum now, I think we probably should. Even more worrying for Miami, of course, is that they've got a couple of big injury issues. Jordan Cameron may not play this weekend, and he's been excellent both over the middle and in protection. And then there's the left tackle position, Brandon Albert. That could be a real miss. The honestly, the other options there, Grayson Fox, Billy Turner, the man Simon Clancy described as the human turnstile, Dallas Thomas, or even potentially Jeff Linkenbach, the free agent off the street. I just, none of those sound like they're going to be brilliant against that Bills defense, and therefore I think the Bills will get the upset on the road.
The Bills have been called for a league-high 25 penalties. 14 last week for 140 yards.
They got called for a celebrating, like an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty on a New England Patriots touchdown last week. That's how indisciplined they were last weekend.
they were, I think Belichick completely played them. Someone in the Bills locker room said that perhaps they were too pumped for this game by Rex Ryan, and that's down to Rex Ryan. I've picked the Dolphins in this because I think they will bounce back. I think the furore about how bad they were against the Jags last week will ensure that the Dolphins will have a really big game against the Bills. I think the defense will suddenly finally click, and I think the Bills won't have enough to beat the Dolphins in Miami.
Well, whilst we're talking about the Dolphins then, a team we are more positive on in general this year, and we did all fancy to have a run at the AFC East. Well, a lot of that was to do with their off-season pickups. They rebuilt that offense, brought in a lot of weapons on that side of the ball, and obviously brought in a very expensive piece in the middle of that defense. No sacks last weekend against a Jacksonville team who were sack happy in the last 2 years. Could be a concern. Are they going to bounce back from that and get to Tyrod Taylor? All of that is going to be fascinating to watch this weekend. But we managed to catch up with the man who's been reworking this team and trying to start a renaissance in Miami. And that is the Executive Vice President of Football Operations in Miami, formerly the GM of the New York Jets, Mike Tenenbaum. Now, just to confirm, this interview was done for Gridiron Magazine. So the whole thing's on here. It's about 10 minutes of a 20-minute interview we did. The rest of it will be in the next issue of Gridiron when we look at the rebuilding process that's happened in Miami. But with this section here, let's kick off with me asking Mike just what he learned from his negative experiences at the Jets that he's going to bring to his new job in Miami.
Sure. You know, like anytime you go through an experience like I did, it's, you know, I wouldn't be human to say that, you know, you take some time and, you know, you self-reflect and you try to ask yourself the honest and tough questions about, you know, what you could have done better and different. And to be candid, you never know if another opportunity is going to come along. You know, to have the chance to run a second franchise, I'm very fortunate and, you know, I'm forever grateful to, you know, Steve Ross for giving me this opportunity and, you know, couldn't be happier to be with, you know, with the Dolphins now.
Fantastic. And from the people we've spoken to, a number of people involved in and around the organization already, and as I talk about yourself, the phrase that's kind of consistently come up is that they see you as a closer, someone that gets the deal done where maybe others don't necessarily. Do you think that's part of the reason behind Miami having such a successful offseason in terms of bringing players in, your ability to convey a message where perhaps others can't?
Well, you know, I can't speak for anybody else. I could just tell you that we have a great story to tell. It starts with ownership. You know, there's a cap on player compensation in our sport, but there's not a cap on, you know, resources we can put into player wellness and player development. And we have an incredible story to tell here. We do more for our players than, you know, I think anybody else does, and that's our standard, and that starts with Steve Ross. So, you know, if I close, I guess that's my job, but, you know, I'm just a good storyteller. You know, I have a great story to tell. I have incredible teammates. You know, we have a head coach here who's a great person, who's been in the league for a long time. We got a great quarterback who's a good person, very coachable. You know, there's a lot of great people here. And, you know, we have a gentleman here named Wayne Diesel, and we got Wayne from the Tottenham Spurs. And, you know, Wayne's been as important acquisition as anything else we've done because he's brought a whole level of expertise, science, and experience to our athletes. And he has, you know, 30 plus years of experience in performance and injury prevention. And, you know, you could ask our players, they feel better, they feel healthier. And I know that's going to serve us well over a 16 game season.
That's fascinating, actually, because you mentioned Wade there. Obviously, he was featured a lot in the media over here around concussion issues after the Tottenham goalkeeper, Hugo Lloris, went back into a game with a concussion. So obviously that translates in a big way into what the NFL do. So fascinating stuff. I mean, a little off topic, but of the off-season acquisitions, you talked about the great people who were in the building already, but obviously the big splash was bringing in Ndamukong Suh. I'm told from very early on you were key in making the decision to bring him in. Obviously, it was always going to be big money, and a lot of teams fancied a run at him, basically. So the situation sounds fantastic. I'm don't get me wrong, I'd love to live in Miami if I had the opportunity. It's absolutely wetting it down in London today, but and I'm sure the money helped and everything else. But what were the conversations you had with Sue in terms of your vision for the team as a competitive organization?
Sure. You know, this franchise has been very close well before I got here. You know, it's been, you know, in the playoff run until the last game of the season, you know, the last couple of years. So, you know, there wasn't a lot of hype or conjecture to try to get the team over the hump. And, you know, to bring in guys like Ndamukong Suh and Greg Jennings and Jordan Cameron, we just felt like, again, there was a strong nucleus that was built well before I ever got here. And, you know, we try to add some pieces that hopefully will get us over the hump.
Obviously, there are a lot of other pieces there you mentioned, and there are a couple of guys I do want to ask about. But just on the very final thing with Sue, was there a certain point when you knew that you had him over the other team's bidding before he'd put pen to paper? Was there a moment where you thought, right, this is locked in, he's going to be our guy next year?
you know, I'm an optimist by nature, but I'm also a little bit of a warrior. So until the contract is signed, you never know. And, you know, free agency is a competitive, you know, sort of, free agency is a competitive environment. And, you know, I've been through enough of these where you win some, you lose some. So, we'll just say we were tenacious until, we were able to get the contract signed. And, you know, again, we were very fortunate to get somebody of Sue's ability and his character and work ethic as well.
Fantastic. And another one of the players I want to ask about is the wide receiver out of New Orleans, Kenny Stills. How early on in the spring did you target Stills, and how did that deal come about?
Yeah, he was another guy. You know, we felt like, Mike Wallace was a guy that had been here. He brought some, you know, effective play speed for us. And we thought getting a guy like Kenny Stills, you know, he could come in and help right away and, you know, be an explosive player. So, we had talked to Mickey Loomis, the general manager of the Saints, a few times and went back and forth. And, you know, like any contract we do, you know, any trade we do, you know, we wanted to work for both sides. And we felt like, you know, the price for Kenny was reasonable, and he's a young player. He's been in the league. He's had production. He has great play speed, and, you know, I'm excited that he's here as well.
Fantastic. And similarly, when we talk about the offensive weapons, we know you went out, you got Parker, you mentioned Jennings, Jordan Cameron, really improved in those areas in the offseason. But then obviously going out and spending a number 14 overall pick on Devontae Parker. When was the decision made with that? Was it a case of as the pick came up, or was he high on your board early on?
Yeah, he was very high on our board. We had two or three other guys that we were comfortable taking. And candidly, we were surprised he was there. So, Devontae has, you know, great range, long arms, can jump. So he allows the, the quarterback to have a little bit of a bigger margin of error. I think he's going to help us over the course of the season, you know, in the red zone on third down. He had a little bit of a setback. He had a foot injury in camp, but he did play against the Redskins. And I think over the season, you know, he's going to get more and more opportunities.
It wasn't just new players and new draftees. Obviously, the other really big storyline from the offseason is always going to be re-signings and re-signing your kind of star quarterback drafted just a few years ago in Ryan Tannehill. What was the importance of getting the Tannehill deal done as early as you got it done in the summer, especially what happened after Sanchez's new deal and your time in the Jets?
Yeah, I've been asked that before. You know, look, if I was just going to make decisions, what happened at the Jets, you know, that's going to stop progress. That's going to be selfish. That's not, you know, we're talking about, you know, the Dolphins now. We have to make the decisions with the information we have about, you know, the Miami Dolphins. And the thing about Ryan is he's gotten better every year. He's tough. He can make all the throws. He's a good athlete. He's a great person. And in my mind, when you look at the supply and demand of the quarterback position and you're building a team, I think, you know, our franchise will be served well by having Ryan be our leader for a number of years. And what's great for me, from what I find to be extremely fulfilling, is he was drafted a Dolphin. He's been coached by, you know, guys like Bill Lazor and Zach Taylor, who are really good coaches, and he's gotten better. And we want to send that message to our locker room that, you know, you come in and do some of the things that Ryan's done, and we're going to reward you here, and, you know, the grass isn't always greener, and you don't need to leave.
Fantastic stuff. And I want to ask you about Wembley and this season coming up, but there was one other player who we heard a lot of rumour about, a lot of conjecture about in this offseason, and that was Jimmy Graham, described as the one that got away, I've heard. How close did that deal come to being done?
Yeah, you know, we have discussions with teams about a number of players. Sometimes things work out, sometimes they don't, but I got to tell you, we're really happy to have Jordan Cameron here and, you know, to get him as a free agent. I think he's a guy that we're going to look back and say, like, wow, I'm glad we had him.
Hey, I'm not going to disagree with you. I've loved Cameron's time at the Browns, so it's a great shout. Talking about you playing at Wembley for the third time since the introduction of the International Series, is it something that the team look forward to in the build-up to the season, or, you know, getting a team over to the UK and back in the middle of the season, how much of a distraction is that? How much planning does that take on your part?
Yeah, you know, the team went there last year and obviously played well against the Raiders, so you know, that familiarity is, you know, really important from a standpoint of, you know, same hotel, same routine. I think that helps a lot. You know, the sport is so popular over there. It was a great experience. I was there with the Dolphins, again, as a consultant, but it was great. So I think everyone here is extremely excited to go back.
Fantastic. And the fact that you've been here twice before, you mentioned it there, but in terms of the planning and then even more importantly off the back end, recovery for the players, how much easier does it make that, and having your own knowledge of it?
Yeah, absolutely. And especially, you know, the way the league does it, I think makes a lot of sense in terms of it's, you know, we have the bye week when we come back. For an East Coast team to go over there, obviously, is a little bit of an easier trip than a West Coast team. But, again, I think the league does a nice job of, you know, you come back for your bye week, so there's really no issue with, you know, as it relates to, you know, jet lag and things like that. You have a whole week to recover.
Fantastic. And obviously, we know the Dolphins are going to be taking on the Jets, your former team, when you come over here. Does that hold a special note when you see that coming up on the schedule, particularly as a divisional rival and with your history there?
Yeah, well, you know, look, you know, I still have, like, a lot of relationships there that, you know, it'll be, you know, great to see a lot of familiar faces, both personally and professionally. And, you know, it's going to be an important game because it's a division game. You know, obviously they're off to a good start, and you know, especially early in the year, you want to try to win as many of the division games as possible. So, you know, from that standpoint, it's going to be an important game.
Now, I just want to finish off by asking about the expectations for the season overall, and I have to tell you, Simon, who was originally going to do this interview, he's a 20-plus year long supporter of the Miami Dolphins. So, I'm going to tell you that he worded this question before I ask it. This is the best Miami Dolphins team since Dan Marino retired, and expectation is high. Does that concern you?
No, I mean, we embrace the expectations. You know, again, we have a great story to tell, a lot of good people. We have great resources from a good owner who's given us everything we could ask for. So it's up to us now to go out there and show everybody why those expectations are high. And, you know, I'm glad we got the first one on our belt. You know, we're going on the road again this week to play Jacksonville, which is a team that always plays us hard. And, you know, down the road when we get to London, we'll be ready for the Jets. But, you know, this week it's about Jacksonville, and, you know, we're excited about the year.
Does that level of expectation mean that if it's playoffs or bust, basically, particularly for Coach Philbin?
No, you know, for us, it's our expectations are high because we've earned it. And Coach Philbin's a large reason why the expectations are high. So, you know, he's been here for a number of years. He's laid a really good foundation, and hopefully, you know, this is a year that, you know, a lot of that hard work will manifest itself. But, you know, obviously, we have a long way to go. But we're excited about the year. There's no question about it.
Fantastic, Luke. I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with us. And we look forward to seeing you in London.
Yeah, thanks. We're looking forward to getting over there. Thank you.
Great to hear from Mike Tannenbaum there. We're going to be doing our best next week. The Jets and the Dolphins, just to let you know the plan for the Wembley Games next week. Due to the Rugby World Cup and the lack of facilities, they're both going to be flying in the Friday morning. So there's going to be media availability on the Friday. So our preview podcast will come out Friday evening after we've been to the practices. We're probably going to have to split it between us as well because they're only doing a day each to get together and discuss it. I don't know whether we're going to get to speak to players. That's not been made clear at the moment. There will be press conferences. But we have spoken to both the teams about getting a player on early next week. These things often don't come off. They've both said some very promising things. But hopefully at the start of next week, we'll have a player from each of those teams for our review of the weekend podcast. And either way, we'll be doing plenty of previews up until the Wembley game. And next week, once it's a little bit clearer what we're going to be doing for the Wembley game, we'll announce that on the podcast and we'll try and sort out a meetup and get as many of you guys that are coming to the game to come and find us, and we'll go for a beer before or afterwards. Obviously, it's another afternoon kickoff. So beers afterwards. Good idea. Good fun.
Great idea. Great idea. Okay, so next up, I am going to go for, well, continuing the Wembley theme, I'm going to go for the Eagles-Jets game, whoever the underdog is in that.
The underdog in this game is, by a very low margin, 2 points. I've seen it as low as evens in some place, the Philadelphia Eagles. 0-2 coming into this one against the 2-0 Jets. We've had a few tweets on it. Josh, Jets to beat the Eagles isn't even classified as an upset anymore, is it? Callum says, Jets to go 3-0. Geez, I must be delirious. And Liam Blackburn, of course, of this very parish, says, it's just written in the stars that Sanchez will come off the bench and lead a come-from-behind win in the Meadowlands. So he was picking the Eagles for the upset today. The fact of the matter is these two teams have wildly defied preseason expectations. New York actually looks like a good unit. Defensively, we knew they were going to be good. And of course, tell me that channel is turned up, my friend. Had a great game last week. Can he continue to impress against the Philadelphia Eagles? Chip Kelly retooled his offense this offseason. Not been impressive through 2 weeks. Can they do it this week?
No, but I'm going to pick them to do it this week anyway, because they have been so bad. Last week, last week they only managed 21 yards of offense in the first half. 21!
Everyone expected them to revolutionise offence, and they did. They managed to revolutionise offence by only getting 21 yards and somehow still being in a game of football.
They averaged 35 yards rushing on the ground per game and have only converted 5 out of 23 third downs. They are a terrible team. I was embarrassed, Kelly said. That is not the way we're supposed to play football. So it can't get any worse. They are at the bottom. There is nowhere else but up, and that's against the green and white of the New York Jets.
I was thinking about picking this as my next choice to be. I do think Philly are going to be a bounce-back team. We talked about the East last week. We talked about how impressed we are with the Giants overall. There's some concerns for the Eagles. They're unsure if DeMarco Murray's going to play. But a big, big miss potentially for the Jets is Darrell Revis is currently uncertain with a groin injury. Obviously, a lot of that could change overnight. But Todd Bowles told reporters on Thursday that he was limited in practice and there's no guarantee that the All-Pro cornerback will start on Sunday. That'd be a big miss. I'm going to go with the Jets because I just think those... a lot of it depends on if Decker starts this weekend, but Decker and Marshall have been so impressive through the first few weeks.
Ivory.
That Eagles secondary has been poor, much poorer than we expected. The Eagles offensive line, particularly the guard play, the inside play, has not been what it needed to be to get the run game going. Mm. There's plenty of reasons to think... And the Jets can disrupt you with just their front four. They don't need to bring outside guys. They don't necessarily need to bring corner blitzes, though they have done. Calvin Pryor's been getting sacks and interceptions. They've got a ridiculous number of turnovers, this Jets defense.
10.
But just how Jetsy would it be to lose at home to a team who've looked so bad through the first 2 weeks? It's just the most New York Jets thing to do. I'm picking the Jets in our pick'em, yep. But if the Eagles got an upset here, not that big of an upset.
No, not that big of an upset, because it would be extremely Jetsy. It's your turn for the underdog draft. Who are you picking next?
Shall I do something ludicrous? There's a few games that are at a touchdown. There's a couple of games which are at 2 touchdowns, and in fact, let's
hysterical, hysterical,
and say that against all logic, the 15-point favourite Seattle Seahawks will lose at home to the Jimmy Clausen-led Chicago Bears. We've had a couple of tweets on this one. Cal, let's hashtag let's get hysterical. Bears somehow get a win, leaving Seattle in panic mode. Ryan, a cutlerless Bears suddenly look like they have a QB and pile more misery on the Seahawks. To which Damon replied, what have you been smoking? I think probably echoing how the rest of us are all thinking about this game. And yet, I've got to find some way to defend that I think the Chicago Bears could go in and win this one. Yeah, the Seahawks in a position they've not been in 4 years. You know, could be overreacting to 2 disappointing losses. Cam Chancellor will be back this week. We know that much. And in fact, Cam Chancellor's message alone should be enough to make this team feel like complete and utter idiots. He messaged, and this, I'm going to just read it to you.
Read it verbatim.
Read it to you verbatim. That's the word I'm going to use. Here's what Cam Chancellor text. Stephen A. Smith, of all people, not even a good reporter, said, I'm a go help my teammates. I don't know why I'm doing the accent. But it's the only way to communicate that. He literally says, I am a go help my teammates that are understanding of my position, and the ones who aren't, God forgives us all. Why can't I? Time to help us get back to the big dance. I can address business after the season. Me and Marshawn started a mission 2 years ago. I can't let my dog down. Real talk. Real talk, guys, from Cam Chancellor, who genuinely believes that he has been drawn back to the fold by God or by Marshawn Lynch. No one's really 100% sure. Look, the Seahawks are definitely going to win this one, but I'm just trying to justify it somehow. Marshawn Lynch has a terrible game on the ground after looking poor last week. The Bears' run defense suddenly starts looking good. Their secondary suddenly comes together, and the Seahawks slotting Cam Chancellor in doesn't help them. Jimmy Clausen throws for 250 yards and 2 touchdowns and wins in an ugly game.
I hate the Bears as much as the next person. But 95 yards were given up to James Starks by the Seahawks against the Packers. By the way, wonderful win. Thank you very much. with Jimmy Clausen under center, he was terrible last week. He's only won one out of 11 as a starter. His 60.0 passer rating is the lowest among all 67 quarterbacks with at least 300 attempts since 2010 in his rookie year. So that's why they will give the ball to Matt Forte. And if the Seahawks manage to give up 95 yards to James Starks, that's about 200 yards that they're going to give up to Matt Forte. That is the only way. The only way and only chance that the Seahawks will lose this game.
There is a reason that this line is 15 points in favour of the Seahawks. Yeah. Of course, on Pick'em, I've taken the Seahawks.
Of course, haven't we all?
And if you've not taken them, and if you're not taking them in your Survivor pool this week, so far, I've got through my first 2 weeks of a Survivor pool by picking against the Bears. I'm going to be doing the same again this week, guys. How far through the season can I get just picking against the Bears every week?
Well,
that's the big question.
I did say on the last podcast that I think that the NFC North could have, and I was a little tipsy, but when the dust is cleared in my mind, the Bears could go 0-16, and the Packers could go 16-0.
There you go, you'll win your Survivor pool, yeah. Easy, although you can't pick the Packers, the Lions, or Vikings twice, so you'll have to find something else those 3 weeks, guys, I'm afraid. Right, move on, pick your underdog, Ollie.
Is the underdog in the Denver-Detroit game Detroit?
The underdog in the Denver-Detroit game is, in fact, of course it's Detroit.
Well,
how good has that Denver defense been? Come on, boy.
Denver defense has been fantastic this year. But I'm going to go Detroit. The Lions have won 4 in a row and 10 out of 13 at home. It will be their first game at Ford Field this season. Calvin Johnson caught a touchdown last week. I think he'll go big again against an inferior Denver secondary when it comes to Calvin Johnson. Wait, that did sound completely wrong when I said it, but I'm going to stick with it. Amir Abdullah's going to find the holes in the very, very poor defensive line of the Denver Broncos. Wait, again, that sounds wrong. Look, Detroit's defense could win this for them. Because
let's just remember what's been said today, Thursday the 24th September, that the Broncos will stay committed to Gary Kubiak's playbook. Now, did anyone watch the Chiefs a week ago today and see that Peyton Manning pulled the Chiefs apart when he was allowed to get into shotgun, go up tempo, and you know, that same offensive style has been married to since the 90s. Mm-hmm. They're going to go back to Kubiak's system this week. Kubiak says you have to stay committed to what you believe in. We're going to get where we want offensively if we stay committed to something. We believe in what we're doing, been doing it a long time. We've just got to get better at how we're doing it. But Gary, you had a better offensive line when you were in Baltimore. You had arguably better running backs, although I think CJ Anderson can have a bounce back. You've got to let Peyton be Peyton. That's the key thing here. If they don't, actually, I don't think the Lions are a terrible pick here. But that Denver defense is ridiculous.
That Denver defense is ridiculous. But the rushing offense is not great. CJ Anderson's, of his 24 carries so far this year, 10 have been behind or for negative yards, the line of scrimmage. Ronnie Hillman has been stuffed at or behind the line of scrimmage on 7 of his 21 carries. Okay, they've come up against some pretty good defenses, but Detroit, we say it, they have that defensive DNA that Ndamukong Suh has left, and I expect them to really go up against this rushing offense, and that will put more pressure on Peyton Manning. And if they're going back to this ridiculous idea of Gary Kubiak's play action and more rushing, that's where two rutting stags will hit, and I think the Lion Stag will beat...
Who have you actually picked in the Pick'em?
At Denver.
So have I.
Yeah.
Tim did tweet us on this one and say that he believes that the Detroit Lions can upset the Broncos. And the reason he tweeted that is because he believes that in another upset, which I'm going to pick as my next upset, that the Raiders will topple the Browns to go joint top of the AFC West as Detroit upset the Broncos. We've also had a bold prediction in from 3rd and 99 on Twitter, who just says that Browns v Raiders will be one of the most exciting games of the week. That is incredibly bold. For the Cleveland Browns, although he helped secure them victory last week, Johnny Manziel is set to return to the sidelines. Having recovered from a concussion, Josh McCown will lead the Browns in Sunday's home game against the Raiders. Mandel, of course, threw for two touchdowns last week. Whilst the Oakland Raiders had Derek Carr play his best game as an NFL quarterback, they played well defensively and they managed to beat the Baltimore Ravens at home. They're only 3.5-point favourites in this one, Cleveland. I think that's basically because they're the home team. But do you know what? Taking Johnny Manziel out of this game when you are a team who doesn't know what they are, doesn't know what they can do, has questions all over the offense, has a few questions on the defense, although some decent points. They've got a great offensive line, meaning you can protect a guy like Johnny Manziel and let him do something slightly exciting. I hate to say it, but I'd stick with Johnny Football. The ceiling with Josh McCown is like going 6-10, maybe 7-9. I seriously doubt they're going to do that in a tough AFC North. But who knows what the ceiling is with Manziel? Maybe he comes out and plays like he did last week with those two touchdowns. He hasn't run the ball very much yet. Once he gets used to the offense, gets behind that offensive line, I just think do it. Just throw him in. Give him a chance. You're not going to win anything with Josh McCown. You could win something with Manziel. And I think the Raiders improve on their fantastic win last week to go 2-1 by beating the Browns.
I don't think that's essentially too crazy. It was a coin flip for me, and because the Browns are at home, I went for the Browns, but I've got time.
Switching my pick. I have gone on to the Gridiron Result Picker at gridiron-magazine.com, and I have just clicked on Oakland Raiders over Cleveland Browns, and I'm clicking submit predictions.
You know you can change them.
Yeah, I know, but it sounded more dramatic the way I said it. Right, Ollie. Pick your underdog.
My underdog is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers are 6.5-point underdogs as they travel to the Houston Texans next weekend.
Yeah. Again,
just to give you a little bit of an idea of what the storylines are in this game, sure. Jameis Winston showed marked improvement from his NFL debut in Week 2, led Tampa Bay to victory in a hostile environment in New Orleans. The challenge does appear even greater this weekend for Winston as he goes and faces a Texans team who are not only 0-2, Tampa Bay, of course, at 1-1, but they're committed to cleaning up those mistakes on the other side of the ball. And they've got JJ Watt and they've got Clowney starting to look interesting. They're favourites for a reason at home. All right, offensively, they're not very exciting with Ryan Mallett. But why do you think that Tampa Bay can go there and win with all of their problems?
Mike Evans could be back.
That is true.
Vincent Jackson, you can never, ever rule him out. Jameis Winston saw...
Expect Vincent Jackson to have a bigger, much, much bigger role this week with Austin Seferian Jenkins out for 4 to 6 weeks as well.
Well, exactly. And I think when you've got Jameis Winston, who scored a rushing touchdown last week, he looked much better. And this after being hit quite a few times. I think he was hit 3 times. He fumbled once as well. Okay, he's going up against a formidable defense. But on offense, the Texans, like you said, don't have much. DeAndre Hopkins is out with a concussion. It looks like they'll keep back Arian Foster.
Just to give you an update on that, on Thursday, Arian Foster said to the media he plans to wait until he's 100% to hit the field, then said he's not yet 100%. He said, I'm going to make sure I'm 100% so I'm not jeopardizing myself or my teammates. He added that his groin... He added that he feels wonderful, but his groin is not 100% yet. His groin might feel wonderful. I don't know. But I'm not saying that I've ever known Arian Foster's groin to know whether it feels wonderful or not. But certainly it's unlikely he's going to return this weekend, but looking much more and more likely that he gets a week 4 start. And that's massive for this Texans team, who on offense really lack any kind of identity whatsoever. Nobody knows what they really are. There are reasons to believe that the Bucs could go and win this game. I just think their offensive line against that Texans defensive line just scares me.
Yeah, I think the Texans defense will win the game. I predict a JJ Watt touchdown of some sorts. Yeah, I did throw that out there. What's your next game, Will Gavin?
My next game is going to be that I'm going to take. We're getting into the region where we're not taking too many bold favourites. Why not? Let's throw this one out there. Monday Night Football, a repeat of Super Bowl I. Tom on Twitter agreed with me in his bold prediction that the Chiefs are going to roll into Lambeau, continue their undefeated streak, and beat the Green Bay Packers. They are, of course, 7-point favourites, the Packers, in this one. No surprise that considering their record in Lambeau over recent times. I think the Chiefs had a bitter loss against a divisional rival. They turned the ball over too much. But it's not going to be every week that Jamal Charles is going to fumble in a silly situation. It's not going to be every week that, you know, your pass rush gets four sacks and still doesn't manage to win a game. I just believe that they can get to Aaron Rodgers. They can sack him. Marcus Peters will get another pick. He'll be the first person to pick off Aaron Rodgers in 550-odd passes at Lambeau. The Chiefs are going to go there and shock everyone and win this game.
Well, the Packers have the worst record against any of the teams in the NFL, and that's against the Chiefs. It's 1-8-1. They've only ever beaten the Chiefs once. So it doesn't look great. However, Rodgers recorded 18 consecutive home games without an interception. He's attempted 539 passes, thrown for 43 touchdowns, and posted 124 passer ratings over a streak going back to December 2012. He's that good, but he's missing, or he may be missing, Eddie Lacy. Devontae Adams did not practice today. This was Thursday. Brian Bulaga, there's doubts on whether he'll be back at all.
That's a big piece to miss.
And that's a massive piece to miss. There are things that are pointing towards a Chiefs victory. The over-optimism, especially by me, who says that the Packers could go undefeated. But that could transpire, not from me, all the way across the Atlantic, across the plains to and across a lake to Green Bay. But there could be over-optimism in Lambeau.
Chiefs on a long week as well,
yeah,
let's not forget.
Chiefs on a long week as well. Things could happen. I was worried for the game against the Seahawks. I'm worried for this game against the Chiefs.
It's not been an easy start to the season for the Packers. Of course, I've actually picked the Packers in Gridiron's Pick'em.
Why wouldn't you?
But there are reasons to believe this could be a Chiefs upset, particularly with such a high line. If you're a betting man or woman, I would consider taking the Chiefs at a 7-point line, because this could be a lot tighter than a touchdown. Right, let's just do the last two games that have got a big distance between them, and then we'll just rattle through the last few games. So there are two more games which have got a big points line left. Mm-hmm. One is the all-NFC West clash. The other is the mess of the AFC South taking on the might of the AFC Beast. Which one do you want to pick your underdog from?
Yeah, I'll take the 49ers so that you don't have to.
I appreciate that, and I love you for it. Now, for almost all of the games, somebody got in touch with us to give us a reason why they were willing to take the underdog in this one. For some reason, nobody got in touch about this one. Carson Palmer, I tweeted this out yesterday. I watched back the Cardinals-Bears game where the Cardinals moved to 2-0.
Is that just because you like seeing the Bears lose?
Oh, that's part of it. Yeah, yep. Definitely. I try and watch all of the condensed games back in the week. If I can watch every snap, I do try to. Carson Palmer's value to the Cardinals became undeniably evident last season when he was down. He now vies for a 9th consecutive victory under center. The Cardinals aim for a second straight 3-0 start when they open the NFC West Sunday against the visiting 49ers. You have to say that Carson Palmer's recent record for Arizona has been phenomenal. He's 15-2 in his last 17 starts that he finished. The 49ers, why do you think they're going to be the team that faced the Vikings in week one, not the team that got picked apart by the boys in the Three Rivers?
Well, because that 18th game ago, who was it against?
Was it against the San Francisco 49ers?
Yes, they lost 23-20 at the Phoenix
Stadium. That was a hell of a game,
yeah,
as well.
In the 2013 finale.
Mm-hmm.
Colin Kaepernick.
Week 17 games are rarely that good, and that was a really good one.
Well, exactly. He's won 4 out of 5 against the Arizona Cardinals. The lone defeat occurred in Glendale during week 3 of last season. But San Francisco has won 10 out of the last 12 in this series, but has split the last 4 visits to Arizona. Okay, fair enough. But the 49ers defense were terrible last week. They were marvelous against the Minnesota Vikings. They cannot be any worse against Antonio Brown. They'll get better. They'll get pressure onto Carson Palmer. I really do think, although I haven't picked them, that the 49ers could upset the Cardinals. You're not having it, though, are you?
I'm not. And as a 49ers fan, it pains me to say, but that defense did look woefully bad, yeah, against the Steelers, having been so good against the Vikings. I love to think that they may come back up to week one form, but I just really like what Carson Palmer's doing. Maybe their lack of identity in the running game, you know, they're still having to lean on Chris Johnson for most of the carries. If David Johnson, yeah, all right, he's looked phenomenal through his first two games because of the number of touches to touchdowns he's had, but much like Chris Polk now in Texas, you can't keep up that sort of ridiculous rate if you pick it up as a rookie. So those are the few things that make me believe maybe there's a chance, but I think they've got a really strong line yet to have a sack recorded against them in the first 2 weeks, which is pretty ridiculous in itself. Carson Palmer will sling the ball around all over the 49ers secondary, and I think that they will beat them quite handily.
Kaepernick has looked a little better.
Kaepernick's looked a lot better.
Last week.
Yeah, I know a lot of his yards came in garbage time, but he held the ball better. He didn't make silly mistakes. I actually think that Steelers game could have been much worse had we seen the Kaepernick of mid-season last season. But he didn't make the silly mistakes. He lost a fumble, I believe, but other than that, he tended to hold on to the ball better. He made reads. He took a sack where he needed to. He threw the ball away where he needed to. Overall, I'm fine with Kaepernick at the moment. Looks like a competent starter. Now, you said you picked the 49ers so I didn't have to. I think you picked the 49ers so you didn't have to say that the Jacksonville Jaguars, despite being 14-point underdogs, are going to go into New England after a highly charged, emotional first two wins with Tom Brady under center and somehow beat Bill Belichick and his boys.
You're exactly right. I didn't want to pick that game. Go on then.
So,
how are they going to win?
The Patriots secondary is still not good. I don't believe, you know, the Bills still managed to throw on them, the Bills still managed to run on them.
True.
They did get a turnover, but I think that was more Tyrod Taylor making a silly throw. I think Bortles looked much improved in their win last week to make them 1-1.
Getting Allen Robinson in the game, which is vital and key.
Allen Robinson, but also Allen Hurns had a couple of big pickups and looked very good. TJ Yeldon had his best game, he's only had two games in the league, but looked like, you know, a competent NFL running back, something that actually the Jaguars haven't had in this time. Their offensive line looked better. They didn't give up a sack against a very mean Dolphins defensive line. And their defense is not a bad team. They had the sixth most sacks in the NFL last year. They've improved the interior of that line, although obviously they lost Dante Fowler to the early injury. I still think the interior of the Patriots line could be an issue. I was disappointed that Rex didn't bring more complex blitzes, and hopefully Gus Bradley will bring some of that. All right, maybe the Jags aren't going to go there and win, but are they 14-point underdogs? Not for my money. I would put some money on the Jags this week at 14 points. I think they can keep a game tighter than that. I'm not going to say they're going to win it.
Fair enough. Yeah, me either.
Good.
I know we're running short on time. So the next game we're going to pick is the Rams against the Steelers.
Now, this game is evens. It doesn't have a favourite. The Steelers, a Jekyll and Hyde team, look totally different side from the one that lost to the Patriots. Admittedly, not a heavy loss in week one, but you'd suggest that the late touchdown did make the score look a little nicer on them, and the Patriots, not playing up to their very best, did look a little better on them. But they really, really hammered the 49ers last week. St. Louis, obviously, brilliant against the Seahawks in week one. Can that translate against the Steelers this week? Are they going to be able to get that level of pass rush against Big Ben? He's a guy who can get the ball out quick when he wants to.
And he's one of the best.
It's rare that he does. He tends to hold on to it, is the problem. He tends to hold on to it and look through his reads. Is that defense going to be good enough in the secondary against Antonio Brown? I've taken the Rams, but I'm kind of leaning towards back to the Steelers. Both these teams are 1-1, and I think this is a coin flip game.
Well, seeing as it was evens, and I did not know this, I was going to pick the Rams because I think the Steelers should be massive favourites. Le'Veon Bell is back. D'Angelo Williams looks great as well. Mike Tomlin has said, I'm going to play Le'Veon Bell. We'll figure that out, the workload, as we go. If 26 is available to us, we are going to use him.
Yeah, and understandably, he was phenomenal last year.
He was phenomenal. But he's going up against the likes of Robert Quinn, who I love. But Big Ben...
And the interior of that line. Let's give Brockers some love.
We
already gave plenty of love to Aaron Donald last week. But, you know, that's a great front four.
The Rams are a different prospect at home as well. I mean, we saw that against the Seahawks. But I'm going the Steelers. I think they are Jekyll and Hyde. I think their defense was much, much better against the 49ers than it was against New England, albeit that the offense really blew the 49ers away in the first half anyway. But with Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, D'Angelo Williams, Big Ben is fantastic. I love watching him play I'm going Steelers.
Okay, moving on. Atlanta, 2-0. At Dallas, 2-0. Both teams off to 2-0 starts. Moods could be quite different for either side. Dallas lost Tony Romo to a broken collarbone. Traded for Matt Cassel this week. By the way, well done to Buffalo. They cut Matt Cassel. They brought him back into the building to be the third choice. In essentially, that's how it would appear. And then they managed to trade him away and get a fifth round pick for him in 2017. Well done, Buffalo.
You know what he
was? Excellent work.
It's the real life equivalent of a fantasy trade bait.
Yes, absolutely. That's completely what he was. The Cowboys have paid up a lot for him, but yet we don't know whether it's going to be him or Brandon Weeden starting under center quite as of yet this weekend. Either option, obviously not better than Romo. Either option, actually, including Romo, none of them better than Matt Ryan for my money. Mm. Julio Jones has been brilliant through the first few weeks. Atlanta are slight favourites here going into Dallas. I think Dallas, without Dez Bryant, managed to pull something out because they're playing a terrible Eagles team. But actually, I think this style of zone blocking offence that they use to create that running game and with that mean offensive line relies on the fact that you're going to have guys like Dez on the outside, like Witten on the inside. Terrence Williams, not a number one receiver, even though has looked good through two games. And I just think they're going to be able to stack the box a lot more. They're going to be able to bring defensive backs inside to stop any kind of running game, in that zone blocking run game that they use. And Dez is going to be a much bigger loss than people think. And I think that the Falcons win in Dallas to start a Dallas slide.
Jason Witten, he had two sprained ankles and a sprained knee last week in that game against the Eagles. And Gavin Escobar...
He's just old. He's just old, as simple as he's old.
But he's been brilliant this year. Gavin Escobar, look for him to come in. But you can't really look beyond the Falcons. I think the only thing is that Tevin Coleman may be a little banged up. But Devontae Freeman came in.
I think Devontae Freeman came in and played well last week.
Looks fantastic.
Well.
Yeah. So rather than it being more of a committee, see more work from Devontae Freeman. Julio Jones is wonderful. I love watching him play. I think he's surpassed Calvin Johnson, AJ Green. I think he's now the third or second best receiver behind Antonio Brown in the league. I'm going the Falcons. And I'm happy about it.
We had a few communications about this. Adam said his bold prediction was the Whedon-led Cowboys built the Falcons. It's something I can see happening. Don't know why. Hashtag bold prediction. And Ian said that Whedon will have a 300-yard game with no interceptions. Interesting. Just three more games to get through. Let's rattle through these. The Cincinnati Bengals travel to the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens, slight favourites at home. But this is one where I don't know about you. I have picked the travelling Bengals, who have really impressed me so far. Both very consistent in recent years. They've opened 2015 in very different fashions. Cincinnati could go 3-0 this weekend. Baltimore could slip to 0-3 with this game. There's a little bit of me that fancies, because the Ravens under John Harbaugh have been a team who generally don't play badly. They are consistent. There's part of me that feels like the bounce back would just be very Ravens of them. We talked about it, the Jets losing being very Jets of them, that they're very good as a home side. Their home record is so much better than their road record. But I've just really liked what I've seen from Cincinnati so far this year. Dalton, not been turning the ball over. Tyler Eifert looks like a different man this year. AJ Green has had some spectacular catches, and you've added to that now a now fit Marvin Jones. He may not have the level of production that he had before he was away, but he just draws away some of that focus in the offense. Jeremy Hill, it was brilliant in the first game. Bad in the second game. So Giovanni Bernard came in, ran for 123 yards and a score. They have everything on the offensive side of the ball. They've still got that great defensive line. Slightly aging secondary, but that's fine. I just think they've got so much talent that I think they go and put the Ravens down to an 0-3 start.
The Ravens haven't really recovered since Terrell Suggs with his Achilles was out for the year. They registered only one sack on Oakland last week, which is abysmal, really. And especially from a renowned defense since them coming into the league in
95, 96, in that region. So we'll say that.
Yeah, we'll go with that. I've gone Bengals in this as well, and I can't really understand why the Ravens are the slight favourites. I think it might be the home thing, but...
Yeah, I think it is just literally people see it as a divisional game, a home game, etc. The Carolina Panthers haven't let injuries to one of the league's premier defensive players and their top wide receiver stop them from moving to the verge of their best start in 12 years. They're travelling, they're at home to a winless New Orleans Saints. Hopeful that Drew Brees, who has been throwing, I believe today, and certainly he will be throwing tomorrow in practice. If he starts, there's a little part of me that thinks the Saints could bounce back in this. But wow, if the Panthers somehow come out of nowhere to go 3-0. What a ridiculous start to the year that would be for a team that we thought were going to be terrible this year.
Mad, isn't it? And that without using Greg Olsen as much as everyone thought they'd be using. The defense has really stepped up. AJ Klein filling in for Luke Kuechly last week was just amazing. And their defense is just allowing 17 points over the last six quarters. I really like the Panthers in this game. I'm not sure how the Saints can do anything. They need to get their run game going. I mentioned this last week. Mark Ingram, CJ Spiller, Kyrie Robinson, they need to get something going in that rush game, because otherwise they're not going to go anywhere. There's too much pressure on to Drew Brees, who isn't being able to find the wide receivers that he clearly doesn't trust anyway. With the loss of Jimmy Graham to Seattle, no one else has really come in and filled that spot. You can't really look past the Panthers' win, but get that rushing game, get Mark Ingram to prove, and CJ Spiller, Kyrie Robinson to prove that they are some really good rushers on the ground.
I do think having CJ Spiller back is a big thing for them as well, but I just fancy a Panthers with a stout run defence to cause the Saints some problems, and the Saints to go 0-3. Horrible, horrible stuff for the fans in New Orleans. Final game of the weekend. It's disgusting we've left this till last, because I think this could be a very, very entertaining game. Minnesota, their offensive coordinator, North Turner, famed for working well with running backs, saw Adrian Peterson playing at the best we've seen him in, well, probably just over 2 years, last weekend. He's going up against his former team in San Diego. Each team at 1-1. There's just part of me that can't work out why, but I think Melvin Ingram's due a breakout.
Gordon.
I think, talking too much about the Saints. Melvin Gordon's due a bit of a breakout. The Minnesota defense looked better in the second week, but I was so disappointed with them against the 49ers. Everything should point to me to the Vikings winning this game, and yet I've just got this gut feeling that San Diego, as a team that I really like, are going to go there and beat the Vikings. It's pure gut. I can't believe it. I think Philip Rivers is a great quarterback. I think Keenan Allen will bounce back from a terrible week two after a brilliant week one. He's inconsistent so far, but it's a very small sample size for the season. I think a lot has to do with whether Ladarius Green's going to be back today, on Sunday or not. He's going through concussion protocol still at the moment. On the defensive side of the ball, we've talked about a different Ingram this time, rather than a different Melvin this time. Oh, I'm torn, Ollie! I know the Vikings are who I should take, but I'm taking the Chargers.
What's the line on this? Are the Chargers or the Vikings the favourite?
The Vikings are favourite by about 3 points.
See, I think I'm taking the... I will take the Vikings, and I have done gridiron. Peterson is back home. All right, home in Minnesota, not on their home field of years when he last. It'll be his first game there, will it? Or did he play one game there last year?
I'd have to double check what that opening game of last season was, to be honest.
Either way,
but he was bad in that game.
He was
so
bad.
It could be his best home game at the TCF Bank Stadium.
Look, he was decent. He was decent last week, despite a pair of fumbles.
And he was more than decent.
One of which was the last. Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how the Minnesota fans react to his coming back. I think they'll and despite them, have you seen it? They've sacked Ragnar.
Yeah.
Sacked Ragnar.
Well, they haven't sacked Ragnar. Ragnar's contract was up, and he demanded to go up from getting $1,500 a game, which is already pretty damn good money, to getting $20,000 a game.
$20,000 a game?
And they basically looked at him and went, yeah, we can find old bearded people anywhere, and we just need to get them to ride a motorbike. Why? Like, and they just sacked him out the door. Ragnar's an idiot.
How about...
I go and audition to be Ragnar.
Next year, you be Ragnar. Grow your beard. You be a ginger beast.
I'll go and do it. I'll go and ride around on a motorbike.
Amazing.
Just to confirm, that first game of that season was at TCF Bank, so he has played there, but it was a 10-6 win over the Raiders, where they scored a touchdown and a field goal in the first quarter and then didn't score another single point for the rest of the game.
Oh, dear.
And the Raiders got two field goals in the fourth quarter.
That sounds like a memorable game.
Yes. That's the reason I don't remember that game.
So, Peterson's got something to prove. I think Teddy Bridgewater looked much better last week. So I'm going the Vikings.
Fine. Let's go. We've gone through all the games. Let us know what you think at Gridiron on Twitter, gridiron-magazine.com, to go and make your picks. Ollie, I think we've rambled as always, as we'd like to on these. I liked how prepared you were this week. Lots of stats, lots of little bits of info. Well done, sir.
Thanks.
Let's have more of that, please. Is there anything else that you'd like to add? Anything, any nonsense you'd like to bring on to the end of the podcast this week?
I saw a fantastic band yesterday.
Who'd you go and see?
I saw a band called The Retrospectives.
The Retrospectives.
And honestly, you've got to check them out. They're from Sheffield, and they came down to play in Camden yesterday. And there was only about 50 people there. But this guy, the singer, he had long hair, a weird hat. Don't let that put you off, because his blue guitar was just insane. The sound that came off it. Everyone, you've got to check them out, The Retrospectives. I can't wait to see them when they next come back down in down to London. Based up in Sheffield, so they play a load of gigs around in the north. So, yeah, please do check them out, The Retrospectives.
Love that.
What about you? Anything that you've been up to?
Well, if we're doing musical recommendations, something I didn't recommend at the time because we weren't doing podcasts around things, it was on holiday, etc. I went to the WOMAD Festival this summer. Now, it was very wet, but there was lots of very good music. If you're into anything in the lines of world music, a bit of it's got this band have a bit of Bangra, bit of African music, bit of New York jazz in there. Ooh. They're called Red Barat, B-A-R-A-A-T. There's about eight musicians. They're all phenomenal jazz musicians, but they play very upbeat, very dancey music. And so if we're doing a recommendation, there you go, Red Barat. That's my recommendation.
And what I'd like, I will check it out. And perhaps if people could have a listen to either Red Barat or The Retrospectives and let us know what you think.
We'll become a music review podcast. We've done movies before. Why not?
Yeah.
Thank you very much for listening, as always. iTunes reviews, please. Follow us on Twitter, at Gridiron. If you don't already, tweet us with your thoughts about the show. You're almost guaranteed that you'll get read out. Anything else you want to add, get on there. Get involved in any beefs. Argue with us personally on our own Twitters, at Ollie Hunter, at Will Gav. We will always have a bit of a Barney on Twitter as well. Thank you very much for listening. No clever play-out music, just back to the normal this week. Sorry about that. It's no Fitz magic, but it is our tune.
In association with Sports Travel Tours, this has been The Gridiron Show.